we present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Shrine. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Thank you. Hello again, and welcome to another edition of My Music. Here at the Commonwealth Institute in London, I am sitting centre stage. On the audience's left are Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. On the audience's right, John Amis and Frank Muir. We have something bright, tuneful and familiar to start with. Ian Wallace, what's this? Everybody knows it, but only you know what it's called.
Yes, I was only thinking it. The only thing that recording lacked in the woodwind section was some of that brilliant whistling from John that we've had in last week. Yes, I do know what that is. He's making signs as if he would whistle it at the drop of a whatever. Oh, no, he's shaking his head. In which case, I will tell you that that comes from an opera by Wolf Ferrari.
Aye, yes.
Called The Jewels of the Madonna.
Yes, that's right.
Is that
yes,
enough?
Yes, it comes in the middle, so it's the intermezzo.
Uh-huh.
Or one of the intermezzi, I suppose you might say, from The Jewels of the Madonna by Wolf Ferrari and Mark Twain. Dennis, listen to this and then tell me why it's called Mock Morris.
Morris, it was a motor car. I discard that. I presume it's something to do with Morris dancing, and in some way that either the tune is artificial or the dance was artificial. Perhaps the dancers turned up. They were all right for those sort of leggings tied around their leg, but they hadn't got the sticks that they brandished. So they got the wooden rollers from the roller towels in the gents. to celebrate this, they were only allowed to dance a mock Morris and not a real Morris.
Yes, why not? Well, right first time. It's a Morris dance, a mock to you. It's composed by Percy Grainger. Very nice too. John, what is this rather elaborately scored piece?
After the first one has been had Ferrari in it.
Yes, for Ian, yes.
And the second one has had Morris in it. I wondered whether this was a Castro or Castrol Rhapsody. But in fact, let's call it a Cuban Rhapsody.
Yes, well done. Yes, Cuban Rhapsody. Cuban. Well, it comes at the beginning. Cuban Overture by
Gershwin.
Gershwin, yes. George Gershwin's Cuban Overture. You're right, for a mark. The London Philharmonic Orchestra there, conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt. I thought at first it's rather strange that Sir Adrian Bolt should conduct this music by Gershwin, until I reflected that they really belong to the same generation. That's when you think about it,
their
birth dates within a very, very short time. One of them happened to live a great deal longer than the other.
One would think that perhaps that wasn't specially his cup of tea, but then Sir Adrian has so many different cups of tea.
Yes.
He was conducting the Seven Veils Dance of Salome, which is not a piece one would necessarily associate with him. And afterwards he was heard to say,
nasty, urgy music.
Charming. Charming, lovely band. Frank, this piece is called The Mouse Waltz, and I'm planning to ask you why.
Strange sound to it. Was it soundtrack music?
Yes, yes. Doing well, doing well. Would you like a clue?
Yes, please.
Well, I could either say to you, Potter, or I could say to John Lanchbury.
Ah. Stephen Potter and...
No.
Angela Lanchbury.
Angela Lanchbury.
It's the... Flopsy Bunnies. No, it's Tales from the Vienna Potter.
Yes, John John Lanchbury's arrangements.
Well, that's Brian right. Forbes'
film. For the film, yes. Brian Forbes' film, Tales of Beatrix Potter. And on. A famous operatic evening begins, "A word, I pray you, sweet ladies and gentlemen." I'm going to play you just one word. A single word, or in two cases, just a single syllable. And I'm going to ask you, on the evidence of that word alone, to construct a whole scene, story, setting, or identity. Ian Wallace, listen very closely. Where, who, and generally what is this?
A moment in the cemetery, where the statue of the Commendatore is there, and Leporello and Don Giovanni, Leporello the servant and Don Giovanni, have been rather cheeky. Really, to this statue.
Yes.
And suddenly the statue pretty well says, "Cut that out."
Yes.
And Leporello's very scared. The Don is one of these extrovert characters who says, "Good heavens, somebody spoke." And Leporello is sort of saying, "Oh, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here." And he said, no. Who was that? Kivala.
So you've got your marks. Dennis, yours is definitely one word. It's a four-letter word. Only one syllable, but lovingly prolonged.
Was it
Bess?
Well, that could either be Bess, he couldn't help it.
No. It's more operatic than that.
Best things in life of... No.
Opera, it's...
Bess, you is my woman now.
Did you get the voice? Did you know whose voice it was? Bess?
No, I was too busy... I couldn't be bothered about voices and the prospect of opera and one word, you know.
Well, you've got the setting. No, it was Louis Armstrong singing...
Very similar. Louis Armstrong. Noel Card? No, it was Louis Armstrong. That's the kind of mistake I make in opera.
It was Louis Armstrong singing to Ella Fitzgerald. Gerald, in Bess, You Is My Woman. John Amis, a baritone soloist, utters this word first. It's then repeated by the whole choir, thus. Do you want me to tell you the word, or can you get it even from that?
S-L-A-I-N.
Slain, that's right. And?
It's from Belshazzar's Feast.
That's right.
Walton. And it says something like the scene of the fingers of the hand that wrote, yes. And that night was Belshazzar the king slain.
Yes.
That's what the baritone sings. King and then the whole chorus goes, yes. Slain!
That's right.
A shout.
You've got the mark. Could you identify the choir?
Well, I don't know. That's not from a Hoffnung record, is it?
No. They sang sort of slain, didn't they?
Slain. Oh, that's Duddersfield choir.
That's right, isn't it? Frank. Luxury for your question, not just one word, but a whole sentence of words. Who is the speaker?
Do the name Ruby Begonia strike a familiar note?
It's an American.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Any further?
Ruby Begonia doesn't strike a familiar note.
It doesn't, no. It comes from the end of a song called She's a Woman, in which this person was accompanied by the Count Basie Orchestra. I can't.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes, Sammy Davis Jr. was right. You worked it out. It was a Sammy Davis
like
record.
All,
very good.
Yeah.
Just looking at the score so far, we have a slight lead by Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. So far. At this point, I edge over towards the piano, not for a medley. but for a couple of illustrations. There are quite a number of popular songs that offer what one might call philosophical advice. I'm going to play you just a snatch, perhaps from the middle of a song, and ask what the philosophical advice is. Ian Wallace, this is yours. Advice, Ian, in just a line.
Try a little tenderness.
Yes. Try a little tenderness gets you a mark. Good. Dennis, what does this song encourage you in doing?
I know the verse of that.
Well, that would be
nice.
You
know that roses won't grow at your door unless you plant them there. You know that happiness is worth waiting for. Life's what you make it. Here's how to take it.
That's the verse.
Yeah, that's the verse of it.
And the chorus?
The chorus
title.
Goes...
Well, the title.
Close, maybe. Yep. Yeah, there's something... Making the best of each day.
Yes, that's right. That's your mark. John, what does this song propose that one should do? Spread a little happiness is right. Frank, in six words, what course of action does this song advise?
It's something... is stirring and stimulating and
yes.
Laughing our troubles away.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Not so much
thank
stirring
you.
As mashing.
Mashing.
Mashing? You might say, yes.
It's a potato
problem.
No,
I had tea in mine, actually.
You had tea in... keep it under your hat.
Tea? You got it, Dennis?
Isn't it Be Like the Kettle and Sing?
Be Like the Kettle and Sing, yes.
Although, actually, you could sing Making the Best of Each Day.
Yeah, you could indeed, yes. Well, never mind, let's press on. An elderly bachelor, his nephew, a frisky young widow, a physician.
Just
the sort of raw materials you'd expect, as you say, Dennis, for a successful comic opera. Ian, you first. This is an opera that includes a serenade, as quite a few operas do. Listen, and then tell me not who sings it. That would be too easy for you, I think. Who overhears it?
On the chorus, hear it, of course, you can gather.
Yes.
It's in the last act of Don Pasquale,
that's right.
By Donizetti, and the young man Ernesto is singing it to Norina, and he's overheard by old Don Pasquale, who thinks that he's married to Norina, having been one of these marvellous marriage ceremonies with a cod notary earlier in the piece. And the friend and general machinator of the whole thing, Dr. Malatesta.
Lovely name. That's right. You get your marks. Dennis,
I think,
sorry.
Would I hazard a guess that the singer is a very young friend of mine called Juan Oncina?
You're right, yes. Juan Oncina. Right from the Vienna Opera. Dennis, the same opera. What is happening at this point, would you say? Can I just interrupt, said, I played this record to my producer, and he said, I'll tell you what's happening at that point. The clarinet player is getting too close to the microphone. (Laughter) What's your version?
I only know three things that happen in an opera. Either somebody's proffering somebody a poison goblet, or if somebody is masquerading as his manservant, or if somebody is eavesdropping on another conversation. One of those three. I think the clarinetist is eavesdropping on the two singers.
Well,
as
Ian would tell you, Malatesta is teaching Norina how to behave in the proper convent manner. That's right, Ian, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, to behave as a very modest young girl out of a convent would behave as if she was going to try and marry an elderly gentleman.
Well, quite, yes. John, here's another passage from the same opera. Typical Donizetti melody. John, just forgetting Don Pasquale for the moment, what was Donizetti's connection with Lucy Bucklaw?
Do you think she was a character in one of his operas?
Yes, but it's rather surprising, a cross-nationality there. Lucy Bucklaw, Donizetti.
Well, why not? Did he write an opera called Emilia di Liverpool?
Yes, true. Answer, Do you know who she was, Lucy Bucklaw?
She was probably the one who went bonkers.
Well, who would that be?
Lucia di Lammermoor.
The Bride of Lammermoor. Yes, the Bride of Lord Arthur Bucklaw. You worked your way to it, anyway. Frank, back to Don Pasquale. The story ends with a moral. After you've heard it, tell us, please, what that moral might be.
The moral of which is, never give a question about ladies who sing soprano, mezzo, or coloratura to Muir.
I will happily accept that, yes. The actual... Do you happen to know the moral, Ian, in that last line from Norina?
If not, I can tell you. Vaguely, it's... cautionary tale to the old gentleman not to delude himself into thinking that he's mutton dressed as lamb or whatever.
Yes, that's right. Any man who marries when he's old is asking for trouble. That's really what it amounts to.
The music that was played just before the coloratura aria took me back to a performance that I did of this opera with the Welsh National some years ago. And just before that beautiful coloratura singing that John was listening to, the heroine has to strike Don Pasquale rather hard on the face. The chorus of the Welsh National were an amateur chorus, and they were all lovely family people, and they were all standing there. And I said, "Now, come on, Jennifer, we haven't rehearsed this thing. You really must rehearse it." And so she walked across, and none of these people, of course, realized what we were doing. And they suddenly saw this girl come up to me and give me a tremendous belt on the face. And one could sort of hear them all going, "Oh, did you see that?" And they were off the stage when the thing actually happened. And I'm sure some of them went home and said, "I wonder what that terrible man said to that girl."
And until this very day, they've all been wondering, haven't they? Now it's explained at last.
Now they know. Glad they all know.
Glad to afford you the opportunity to explain it.
One of the saddest things I've ever seen in an opera house was a performance of that. And when the girl was singing the bit of music that you gave me, she was not a very good singer. She was outparted, like Citizen Kane's wife, Susan Alexander, if you remember the film. And the poor girl, when she came to this aria, she started miming the height of the music with her hands. In other words, when she went up that high, her hands went up that high. When it came down, it came down. And, of course, the whole audience couldn't help laughing. It was one of the most pathetic things I've ever seen.
Awful. Yes.
Once more, our team has lost a point for which no blame is attached to aim is.
Give him time, folks. He'll come up with all of it. In this...
He gets like that sometimes, doesn't he?
This final round, in which the contestants fall to singing, it so happens that each song this week starts with the letter O. The story of O, you might call it. Although it's O-H in this first song for Dennis. I may say, by the way, that all the songs are unaccompanied this last round for once. Oh, Dennis.
John, you may revise your opinion of the most pathetic thing you've ever seen.
Dennis, the story of Joe who wouldn't make his mind up.
Lyrics by a mutual friend of ours, yeah?
Yes, probably.
Oh, Joseph, yes. Joseph, won't you make your mind up? It's time I knew just where I stand with you. My heart's no clock that you can stop and wind up. Each time we make up after being through. Oh, Joseph, 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 time is fleeting. And here and there, now do the Andrews sisters descant. My hair is turning grey. My mother has a fear, wedding bells she'll never hear. Joseph, Joseph, won't you name the day?
If you weren't leading already, you'd have double marks for that. Super that was. John, your O song is from Somerset via Cecil Sharp and Benjamin Britten. O...
Whaley.
Yes.
Whaley.
Can you manage that?
The water is wide, I cannot get o'er, and neither have I wings to fly. Oh, go and get me some little boat to carry o'er my true love and I. There is a ship a-sailing by. She's loaded deep as deep can be. I care not if I sink or swim. Oh, love is handsome and love is fine. Oh, love is charming if it be true. As it grows older, it groweth colder and fades away like morning dew.
Frank, if you're fully recovered, are you, Frank, from that experience? You also
lovely, lovely.
Frank,
cheer
up, Frank. Your song was not collected by Cecil Sharp, only because he didn't hear it. It concerns the doorstep of Mrs. Kelly. Begins with O.
On?
Yes.
Oh, yes. On. Does it go up when I start, or does it go down?
Otherwise, I should start high-ish if I were you.
Start high-ish.
Yes.
On Mother Kelly's doorstep, down Paradise Row, I sit along a Nelly, she sits along a Joe. She's got a hole in her frock, hole in her shoe, hole in her sock, where the toe peeps through. But Nelly's the fairest in our alley. A Mother Kelly's doorstep, down Danny LaRue. I have grown, Nelly, remember you, her beau, and will she love me like she used to? A Mother Kelly's doorstep. Down Paradise Road.
Oh,
yes.
Ian, the song's so far unaccompanied, yours too, I suggest. It's a question, really, about someone's prowess at sewing cushions. Do you know why I put this into the programme? Because you once told me you'd like to sing it. Now's the chance.
Oh, can ye sew cushions, and can ye sew sheets, and can ye sing Ballaloo when the bairnie greets? Sing he an Bobberdy, sing he an Bollahan, sing he an Bobberdy, my bonny wee lamb. He ho hew ho what lie de wee ye, black the life that I lead wee ye. Money, oh ye little tiggy, he ho you ho, what a lie day we.
Thank you. Perfectly lovely. For once, I could not bother to accompany, just sit back and enjoy it, and allot maximum marks. Power without responsibility. It's lovely. I was trying again sometime. I can now divulge the score situation at the end of the game. A victory for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Tony Schreier.